From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Wanda Sykes has never held her tongue. One of her comedy specials was literally called Tongue Untied. She doesn't even hold back when it comes to her own personal life.
It's harder being gay than it is being black. It is, because there's some things that I had... There's some things that I had to do as gay that I didn't have to do as black. I didn't have to come out black. I didn't have to sit my parents down and tell them about my blackness.
Last fall, Wanda joined me before her show in Atlanta to talk about her comedy career and her life away from the public eye. We started by talking about how she'll discuss what she shares on stage with her young kids.
I think I can have that conversation with them down the road, but it would also be conversations about all the stuff that they have because of what I say, you know?
Oh,
so
interesting.
Like, hey, did you enjoy that day at Disney when we had the tour and all that? Did you enjoy that? Okay, well, I'm going to say some stuff about you when I'm on stage, because that's what pays for all those trips, you know? Like, oh, boy, it was nice to be in France for a month over in the summer, right? Okay, well, Mama has to go say some stuff to pay for that. So, it's a give and take.
So I wanted to talk to you. You're also the producer of Last Comic Standing. The winner of The Last Comic Standing, Clayton English, he said this, and I'm going to quote him. He says, Wanda and Paige, he's talking about your other producer, Paige Hurwitz, said, just go out there and be your best, have fun, don't worry about not having a good set, we won't air it. On American Idol, they want that somebody who sings terrible. Would it make better TV if you aired comics really blowing it, like horrible moments for them?
No, then that was the first thing I said when I came onto the project. When NBC approached us, Paige had worked on Last Comic before. She did, some of the previous seasons. And this was my, first one when we took it over. And I said, well, there's things that have to change. I said, no one wants to watch bad comedy. It's not like bad singing. Bad singing, you can get a kick out of it and you're laughing. But bad comedy is just bad TV. You can have a bad night. I could have a bad night. So I don't want them to go out there and have a bad night, and then that's who they are, And we air that, and now we've ruined their career. So we were good about protecting the comics.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, you've done so many different things, and I wonder to what extent you prefer one over the other. And give you an example. You're really well known for being on the HBO series Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David. And from all reports, that show relies very heavily on improv. A lot of the exchanges are improv. I want to play a clip of the two of you. At this point, Larry has just accidentally mistaken a very well-dressed black man for a valet, and you have come over to tell him, give him a piece of your mind.
So you automatically think the black man is the valet?
No, I don't automatically.
Yes, you did.
No.
I saw it.
He's standing by the valet.
Hit my car, boy.
Yeah.
I saw it, Larry.
He had on a white shirt and a red tie and a vest. He's standing by the valet. So it's an honest mistake.
That's honest. Anytime I see a black man in a tie and a suit, I think, hey, you must park cars for a living.
So what's more fun for you, doing that where you get to improvise a lot, or doing a more scripted, like, movie?
If I had my choice, I would say working with Larry. I would love to do a scripted show with him because he's such a great writer. Like, I feel like I got ripped off doing Curb because as much fun as it is to do, he's this guy who, wrote Seinfeld and wrote all these great episodes. And then I get to work with him and it's, hey, make up your own stuff. I'm like, what the hell? What a ripoff. I'm like, you lazy bastard. No, write something. Give me something to say. It's so much fun doing that show, and I think that's the most asked question I get is, when is Curb coming back? Do you know anything about Curb? And the answer is, I have no idea. No idea what his plans are.
Well, so let me give you another example of something, to my mind, very, very different. And that's you at the White House Correspondents' Dinner in 2009. And here, this was right after all those pictures of President Obama had been released. I mean, he's from Hawaii, so there's all these pictures of him, walking in the surf, and he has no shirt on. So here it is.
I don't need to see your nipples. Is there a beach at Camp David? What the hell? a portrait of Lincoln. I'm sorry.
So that's a really different audience than, say, the audience you'll be performing for in Atlanta, people who bought tickets and come there to laugh. This is a different kind of audience. What's that like?
That was the most bizarre audience I've ever been in front of.
Yeah.
And I've done gay cruises, so that's how bizarre that audience was. Because, you know, you look out and you see all these dignitaries, and you know, you look over, you're like, oh, my God, there's a General Colin Powell right there. Oh, my God, is that Madeleine Albright? Wow, this is incredible. And you're just looking around, and then all of a sudden you go, what the hell is Kim Kardashian doing here? You know, and it just negates everything. You're like, whatever, okay.
So let me go back, because I was reading your Wikipedia page in my prep for this, and I read this great line. I want to read it to you. Not completely satisfied with her role with the NSA, Sykes began her stand-up career at a Coors Light Super Talent Showcase in Washington, D.C. This would have been in the 1980s. So I guess you were not completely satisfied at your job at the NSA, and that led you to comedy?
I know, that's so funny. Not completely satisfied. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I just would have had maybe two more good days at NSA.
Right, if they'd only given you that promotion, you would have been a spy instead of a comic.
Yes. I was just biding my time there.
Right.
You know. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, okay. So anyhow, I want to go back to, that was just a kind of a sidelight for me. But let me go back to, because you were featured on that show, Finding Your Roots.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you're aware of the controversy that came about because of Ben Affleck, and it was revealed that he tried to, I guess, control what information went out and what didn't. And I wonder how you felt about in that preparation for that being broadcast. Did you worry about what they might find out about your ancestors, and did you want to have a little more control over what was revealed and what wasn't?
I didn't even think about it like that. It's all, I don't know what the negative things that could come out of it. You know, really, I was hoping that I was going to get some casino money. Honestly, I was like, come on, Native American. I have to be Native American. This would be great. You know, and I joke and I say, well, I come from Free Negro, so maybe that's why I'm so uppity. And it explains my love of white women. You know, that's it.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you about the kind of progress you think we have or have not made, because you had a late night talk show for Fox in 2009. And there's been a lot of discussion lately, especially since they sort of the late night personnel got shaken up a little bit, but they're still all men and they're almost mostly white guys. And it makes me wonder how much progress you think we have made or have not is in entertainment.
You know, you look at it when you say the landscape of white guys, you know, that hasn't changed. But we gained some black bands, you know? So, we got the Roots. You know, we got John Baptiste, you know, it's the human. So, you know, you got to look at that on the bright side.
That's actress, producer, and comedian Wanda Sykes. I spoke with her last fall about comedy, the entertainment industry, and work-life balance. It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Fans of the show Glee said goodbye to their beloved characters when the series wrapped last year. One constant favorite was the sharp-tongued cheerleading coach, Sue Sylvester.
Sloppy freak show babies. You think this is hard? I'm passing a gallstone as we speak. That's hard.
Sue was played by comedian and actress Jane Lynch. She has since moved on from that trademark tracksuit to a new musical comedy set for the stage. See Jane Sing is an hour-long cabaret-style show that travels around the country, and Jane Lynch, of course, stars in it. I spoke with her last year when that show stopped in Atlanta, and I began by asking why she's so often cast as characters who yell at people.
I don't know. I'm a nice person. I don't tell people what to
do.
Well, I guess I kind of do. There's a part of me that does, obviously, or I wouldn't be able to play that sort of thing in a truthful way. You know, it's interesting what people see in you, what pops out, what kind of, you know, they project upon you. But, of course, it's not coming out of a vacuum. But, indeed, this authority thing and this kind of ruthlessness is something that people kind of see in me right away.
Maybe it's your height.
Yeah, I think the height has a lot to do with it. And I carry myself with a certain amount of authority that is completely false and completely a mask. But people buy it.
You know, the last time I interviewed you was 5 years ago. And I want to quote you back to yourself, if I can.
Sure.
You said, I've been fascinated with extreme people all my life. I love people who have that kind of arrogance and walk through the world thinking they're appearing in a certain way.
Yeah. That's a very smart thing. Somebody very smart said that.
Where does that come from, though? I mean, if you're fascinated with those kind of people and you clearly made it as a careful study of them because you're able to reproduce it, why?
I guess who knows why something, maybe because I don't feel like I possess that. So I am fascinated by people with like overwhelming confidence where I look at them and I don't see where it's coming from. And I play a lot of people like that who you go, what makes this person think they know everything? Because they really don't. Like with Sue Sylvester, when I quote history, I'm making it all up. I completely make up points of history that everybody knows except me. And I say them with such authority that nobody questions her.
Well, let's move on and talk a little bit about your singing, since that's what many people are going to hear. And you didn't sing quite as much as I think would have been expected on Glee, but here you are performing a version of Madonna's Vogue from the show Glee. Come on, Vogue. Let your body move to the music. Hey, hey, hey. Come on, Vogue. So can I ask you how different the process is for you as you're preparing for something that involves singing? I know that you made your Broadway debut, I think, in 2013. How different is that process?
Well, this cabaret show is different than the stuff that's already written for you, like doing Miss Hannigan in Annie or doing Glee. You know, I kind of made this thing up out of whole cloth. I just picked music that I loved. And the hardest part, the part I had the most resistance to, was coming up with, you know, what to say in between the songs. That was the stuff I did at the very last minute, which I now call my hilarious patter. But it works really well, and actually the stuff that I'm most afraid of is usually the stuff that ends up the best. But the music is really eclectic. It's music I love. I've got some jazz tunes. I've got some Broadway tunes that have turned on their ear. I'm doing some songs from the Folksmen, the Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer, and Michael McKean group that they performed as in A Mighty Wind. I'm doing two of their songs.
And, you know, the last time I spoke to you, we joked a little bit about how basically you and Ellen were sort of the women everybody points to show, no, Hollywood's really welcoming to gay actresses. Look how successful Ellen and Jane Lynch are. I wanted to play this comment that you made in a video message about gay rights that was released by President Obama's 2012 re-election campaign.
When I was a kid and I first heard the word gay and what it meant, it sounded like a mental, emotional affliction, and I was sure that I had it. It became my great secret.
How does the decision go for someone in Hollywood, whether to be, I guess, an activist for LGBT rights and whether not to be? Were you ever concerned you would simply be too strongly identified as gay and then not be able to get any other roles?
Yeah, you know, that's a stepping outside of myself and observing what I'm doing, and I rarely do that. So I just stick to what pleases my heart, and performing and acting pleases my heart. I think in the beginning I felt some obligation to be a mouthpiece for it, and I think it was probably a good thing then, but now I just kind of do my work. And I think that that's where we are, as a country, but where I am right now is that I love my work, I do my work. I don't do it as a gay person, I don't do it as, you know, somebody who's hiding anything. I just do my work. And, you know, I have Ellen and Rosie O'Donnell and Katie Lang and all and Melissa Etheridge, all those people to thank who, you know, stood up and said, this is who I am. Yeah, you love me for what I do, but just know you're loving a gay person. And so they kind of forged this path for me where I get to just kind of stroll through life in that way. But, yeah, I never worried about that. And, you know, if anybody asked me for my advice for whatever it's worth, I would say don't worry about that. About fear of getting typecast or people thinking of you as an advocate only, you know, just do your work. Do your work.
But is there an obligation? Because there has been some criticism of actors who choose not to come out.
Sure there is. But, you know, you'd have to be listening to the world, taking your cue from the culture on how you want to live your life. And I don't do that. And I don't recommend anybody else do that.
My guest is actress Jane Lynch. She just wrapped up her time as Sue Sylvester in Glee, and she's currently starring in her own traveling cabaret-style show. It's called See Jane Sing. And Jane, I wanted to play you this clip from the film 40-year-old virgin. This is you trying to seduce Steve Carell's character.
You know, Javier, before he made passionate yet gentle love to me for the first time, he serenaded me with a beautiful old Guatemalan love song.
Really? That sounds nice.
Cuando reglan mi cuarto, no encuentro nada. ¿Dónde va con tanta prisa? Al partido de fútbol. Oh, my goodness. I think we better get back to work.
Yeah.
So I've always...
laughing at myself. I'm actually laughing at Steve, isn't it? The best reactor in the business.
But I wonder how much, there's a number of times when you're in different movies or shows in which you'll sing a little clip of something. Is any of that ever improvised?
That's all. That was improvised. That was there. They didn't even know I was going to do that.
You made up that Guatemalan love song?
Mm-hmm. It's actually a part of a dialogue from a Spanish class in high school. It has nothing to do with love and has everything
yeah,
to
you
do
ended...
with cleaning your room and going to a football game.
So you're talking about a soccer game. So when you say that Steve Carell was a good reactor, he literally was reacting to that being the first time he heard you sing that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I mean, before we go, I have to ask you, and I'm sure you're getting this question from everyone, is whether you're sad to say goodbye to Glee or you're ready.
Oh yeah, I was. I wasn't expecting how sad I was to leave Glee. I'm an actor. I'm used to things ending and going in and out of things. And but as this last 3 days, kind of, we had like a clock going. The last 3 days, we were really kind of, oh, this is the last time we'll do a choir room scene. This is the last time we're going to be in the auditorium. And it got very, very sad. And people were bursting into tears. And Leah Michelle fell to her knees at one point. It was just very, very dramatic. And also uncontrollable laughter. It was very heightened. It was an incredible experience these last 6 years. Incredible experience.
That was my conversation with comedian and actress Jane Lynch. I spoke with her last year about her traveling cabaret-style show, See Jane Sing. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Today, some of the funniest comedians we've ever had on this show. My next guest stars in one of my favorite TV shows, Archer. Earlier this year, I visited the show's studios in Atlanta. We started our tour in a department that really demonstrates why Archer is so unique. The illustration style they use is hyper-detailed. You can see the folds in Archer's jacket, every groove in the tread of his sports car's tires. And they achieve that... So on that visit, I let my geek flag fly high. All the illustrators, editors, and producers work closely together, but there's an important part of the show that happens elsewhere, and that's the voice work.
I need to access my operations account, and you're preventing that. Now we can do this easy, or we can do it hard. Your call. No? Hard it is, then.
H. John Benjamin provides the voice of the show's title character, Sterling Archer. I spoke with H. John Benjamin earlier this year ahead of season 7 premiere of Archer. And I began by asking him something that's been on my mind for a while. Why in some roles does he go by John Benjamin and in others he adds the H?
The H stands for something.
Henry, right?
No, not Henry. I never reveal it. It's my secret power. Having a name is my secret power. Having a secret name is my secret power. I started, it was a sort of a joke. I did a animated show in the 90s called Dr. Katz on Comedy Central, and my coworker, who I was dating at the time, Laura Silverman, who played a character on the show, she filled out my credit form, and she thought it would be pretentious to do that. So she got me.
And you kept it?
I did. I kept it. I just never switched back. But, not, by, you know, in daily life, I'm just Mr. Benjamin.
So, now, Dr. Katz was your first role doing voiceover work, was it not?
It was, yeah. Yeah.
And you had no interest in voice acting before that?
Not at all. I was doing comedy at the time, so voice work was not something to be had in in Boston where I was. It wasn't really an option. It was totally out of the blue.
So what was that like when you suddenly started getting so many voicing gigs?
Well, the production company that made Dr. Katz ended up doing very well. And very much like Floyd County, where they do Archer, it was a kind of a small group of people making animation. Because of the success of Dr. Katz, we just kept doing more shows there. So I was really just getting work from one place, and it stayed in Boston for about 10 years. And they did about 5 or 6 shows. So, that was it. The end of that story.
Except that your voice is used for all kinds of different things. I mean, most people know you from Archer and as the title character in Bob's Burgers, but you were the voice of a head of cabbage on American Dad, and you were the tree in a movie called Hell and Back. Haven't seen,
agreed,
but I saw that in your credits. And then you were the voice of the can of vegetables in Wet Hot American Summer, which is the series on Netflix.
Right.
And I wonder, to what extent did your, I mean, you had a long history, and I assume still do, in sketch comedy. Do you still do that?
Not in a long time. I still do some stand-up comedy, but that's getting rarer and rarer as I go to bed earlier and earlier.
And you've talked about how hardworking some of the people were, like David Cross and Louis C.K. especially. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, are you separating yourself? You don't think of yourself as driven like that?
Well, I sort of came to comedy through a friend of mine. And it was never a passion for me. Those people you mentioned and most of the people I knew who were doing comedy at the time were doing it for a reason, you know, like because they loved it and they wanted it to be their vocation. And, I was just kind of this, this sort of tag along. But it just kept going. So it took me, I was a slow starter. But because I came to it less ambitious about what I was doing, I think that's sort of lack of ambition has stayed with me. I'm trying to catch up to those guys.
So then how much did you then appreciate playing a real person? You were in Master of None on Netflix, and I assume that's the point at which a lot of people suddenly connected the face with the voice.
A little bit. I've done, a lot of TV here and there, small parts mostly. I did a show on Comedy Central for a year that I hosted and wrote called John Benjamin Has a Van, although I imagine not a lot of people saw it. So, Master of None for sure, most recently, has been something I get recognized for. But it's never been, I've always been doing stuff like that for the last 20 years, but it's just been here and there. The animated shows, for some reason, have been constant, and it's great.
Do you find people suddenly recognizing your face?
Yes. Archer actually was the first show, animated show, that I've found myself getting recognized publicly quite a bit. I think just based on the nature of the fans, how overbearing they were.
I would say enthusiastic.
How obnoxious they are, how drunk they are. Archer just was a show that got, became kind of a cult hit very quickly. And I think because of that, people look up everybody who's in the show now. And, you know, when I started animation, there was like very little internet. So I don't think the same diligent research was done by kids, you know, looking up your favorite animated voice actor. But now I think it's commonplace. So Archer definitely changed. I was, and still am recognized quite a bit for that.
I'll continue this conversation with H. John Benjamin, star of FX's Archer, in just a moment. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. Back now to my conversation with actor H. John Benjamin. He's the star of the very popular FX series Archer. The animated show was recently renewed for an 8th season, and I spoke with H. John Benjamin about one of his biggest fans, his son.
He's not particularly critical. He of course loves Archer, and it's for him certainly a guilty pleasure for watching it. He's 13. I just hope a lot of the references go over his head.
Well, a lot of the references go over my head, so. But I don't know. 13-year-olds are kind of sophisticated at this point.
Yeah, I'm sure he's looking everything up, and we've blocked his Google.
So if I Google your name, I don't know if you've done this ever, but if I Google your name, the first related search that comes up is H. John Benjamin net worth.
I've seen that. Somebody sent that to me. It's quite a bit of money.
Well, I have to assume people are wondering how much you can make from voice acting.
That I feel like is a I'm not sure where that number came from. It's pretty random. Maybe I put it in.
The number that you're listed as being worth?
Yes. You don't make a ton of money from voiceover. I've been fortunate to be in shows that have lasted a long time, and now being on two shows at once, you can kind of carve a good salary together. But back when I started doing that, it was, you know, I was kind of barely paying rent for a couple of years with doing small animated shows on cable networks. It's getting a little better, and, you know, the success of the two shows I'm in has been good. But let me clarify, it's a ton relative to the work I do, so I just want to be fair.
Fair enough. Though I doubt very many people who are just getting into voice acting are going to also reach that kind of success. They'll probably be more on the suffering end.
Oh, they'll fail. Yeah, no, I know they'll fail.
Also, I wonder how different the process is for you for, say, Archer, where you're basically reading by yourself. None of the other cast members are with you. I assume it's just a producer reading lines for you. And Bob's Burgers, where you're all together. Does that make it a really different process?
Relatively different. Not extraordinarily different, but Archer is more streamlined. I'm still performing the scenes in the same way. I read usually with the producers and the director of Archer. So we go through the scenes and a few times. With Bob's Burgers, it does more promote an ability to improvise a little more. And so it's more unruly when you're working with a group of actors, some of whom, all of whom are improvisers.
Although you said it threw Kevin Klein off.
I think when he first did the show, he was surprised at how disorganized it was. He really had he has a classic actor's background. So every line was important to him. And it's not that way for the rest of the cast. It is, but because we work together for so long, it took him by surprise, like that we don't practice our lines over and over and rehearse. That was the one thing I think he was shocked about, no rehearsals.
Okay, and another question I just have to ask for me is, how is Archer not deaf yet? Because people are shooting guns off right next to
his... How is he not dead yet, I feel.
Well, there's that, but then the show would end.
Apropos. True. Hopefully someday he will be.
Wait, deaf or dead?
Deaf first, then dead. I don't know. There's a running joke where he has tinnitus, if that's the way it's pronounced.
It is, and it's the ringing in your ears.
Yes, and that's obviously from all the gunshots that are in close proximity to his ear.
And explosions,
yeah.
Have you ever had a gun go off or an explosion near your head? Any personal experience with that?
I'm quite often used as a stand for rifles, my shoulder. I will have someone lean a rifle on it and shoot. But that's just a side thing. No, the only time I've ever shot a gun actually was in Atlanta with the creator of Archer, Adam Reed, and the producer, Matt Thompson, who took me to a gun range that happened to be right next door to the animation studio. So it takes about 30 minutes to start shooting guns in the South. It was literally get off at the airport, go to a gun range, that kind of thing. Adam Reed, I believe, likes guns. He's a gun enthusiast. Maybe Matt Thompson is as well. It just so happened that there was a gun range, like literally next to the. I don't think they. It's not the same studio as it is now.
Yeah, they've moved.
Where they were, there was a gun range right next door. So I got there, I put my bag down, and they were like, you want to go shoot some guns?
And I assume since you've never done it again, you didn't enjoy it as much as Adam.
Well, they had like assault weapons there. Like, no, there was no restrictions on what you could shoot. And no questions asked to me, like, have you ever shot a AR-15 before? So somebody's got to talk to that gun range. I mean, I could have killed myself.
Well,
I think I almost did. I think I shot the ceiling.
Well, one thing that I learned during our tour was that every time a show is done and is going to air, they have a huge watching party down here with pizza. So the next time you're in Atlanta, you could watch it.
Yeah.
With everyone.
Go to the gun range.
Yeah. And exactly. And pick up that AR-15 again.
Yes. And I'll take you up on that.
H. John Benjamin is the voice of Bob in Bob's Burgers. Many voices on the PBS Kids series Word Girl, and the voice of Sterling Archer on Archer. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.